This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. You've probably heard the phrase at least once, the world is getting faster, and you've probably said, I need to slow down. In a world governed by corporate values, time is a commodity, and the obsession with time management expresses the desire to maximize efficiency.
Okay, once in a while, I'll take a long lunch. A siesta.
Time thief. Fire him.
Dwight, you've really never stolen any company time?
Never.
You are a thief of joy.
Cliff from NBC's The Office. Sarah Sharma wanted to know where this fixation on time was coming from and how our jobs influence the way we experience time. Her new book is called In the Meantime, Temporality and Cultural Politics. Sarah Sharma is a professor of media and cultural studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She's going to give a talk in Durham later this week, but first she's on our program to talk about time. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I think the best way to get into this conversation, tell us what the book is about, is for you to tell us the story of how you conceived this book and how it first came to you that this would be a great topic.
Well, I was living in Toronto over a decade ago, and I was a graduate student. And I suddenly had a early morning lecture that I had to teach, and it was suddenly had purpose in my life in a different way. I'd get on the subway in the morning with everybody else, and there was sort of rush of everyday life, all the people in their high heels and the briefcases, and finally I was part of this rush. So there was a sort of sense of this speeding up of life that I suddenly was part of. But however, you know, as the days went on and I started observing the world around me, I realized that not everybody was experiencing this uniform speed of life that we understand as the morning rush. So during my walk to the subway every morning, I started noticing there was an asylum hostel next to the subway station. And this was a place where people new to Canada would be waiting, but they were sleeping, staying. Some were there for weeks, some were there for months, waiting for their accreditation papers. And I would notice the same families every day just sitting there waiting. I'd get on the subway. There were people falling asleep that had worked the night shift. There were maids on their way to clean up for the people that were leaving for the day. So there was, instead of this uniform pace that I suddenly thought I was part of, I started to realize that, no, in fact, there were these multiple experiences of time and people were experiencing the morning rush in a variety of different ways.
So tell us about the various, and really you look at this largely through occupations, although
right.
also spaces, we go to airports and that sort of thing, the occupations you looked at to track these various experiences of time.
Well, I looked at taxi drivers, business travelers, frequent flyers, slow living devotees, as well as corporate yoga instructors. And I wanted to get at the various different angles of thinking about time and speed. And all these different occupations seem to be about time, or we could look at them to be actually about creating time for different people.
And now, when you think of taxi drivers, for one, if you said that to me, I'd think, well, that's an industry where time and space are money.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have a very keen sense of time. But your finding was pretty interesting, how it changed.
Yes. So in fact, taxi drivers were the least likely to believe in this notion that the world was getting faster. And in fact, more than almost all of them would say to me, well, speed was something that entered the cab. So somebody late for a flight, speed up, hurry up, get me there. Or the fact that they would spend hours sometimes in the morning waiting for their first fare, but also wanting to catch the business fare because that would maybe lead to more money, more time spent, more labor during the day or the week. And I had a woman taxi driver tell me that, in fact, her life was anything but fast. In fact, not only did she spend all this time waiting for her fares, but male fares would always tell her to slow down.
Wait. Slow down? You're telling the cab driver to slow down?
Yes. In fact, I have this great vignette from her because she explains how silly it was that they'd get in the cab, they'd be holding on to the door handle, scared out of their mind that there was a woman driving them. And they would, she said, every single day, a man would tell her to slow down.
Wow. And what's interesting, too, is how few female cab drivers there are in Toronto.
Yeah, that's right.
Shocked.
Yes. I was very shocked when I encountered her myself. But yes, she claims there's about a dozen. So
Toronto's a big city. Well, all right. Let's talk about business travelers now.
Business travelers.
Yeah.
Business travelers are probably the ones that I found, at least, were the ones most likely to experience the world as fast. But they're also the populations to which our told constantly that the world is getting faster. Advertisements for new technologies usually center on business travelers, business people. The airport is full of signs for the business traveler that they are, in fact, living the fast life. So this was one of the things I started to realize was we're told we're living in fast times, but that speed only speaks to a few.
Well, not only that, but it's a status symbol.
Right, being busy.
So if you're busy and you've got not enough time for all the things you have to do, your status is elevated.
Right.
And when you have to wait, then your status is lowered. And that becomes a kind of a class distinction. But interestingly, then there's a counter marketing. There's a great ad that you have in here from American Airlines showing their reclining You know, you can sleep in business class on a transatlantic flight. And there, you're the business traveler who's very, very busy. But the promise is no texting, no telephones, no busyness. You just rest in here. So at once, your status is elevated because you're busy and your aspiration is to be not so busy.
That's right. Or to have this free time provided for you. That's right. In fact, one of the things that I found most interesting about the business traveler was that you're completely right about waiting. There's a sort of class distinction about waiting, who waits and who do you wait for. And what I was finding interesting about the business traveler is that they wait in public in a very performative way. So not just by the fact that you can hear them talking on their cell phones quite constantly, but that there are napping pods available for them at airports to sleep in, which are not exactly out of public view, and all the other indicators that these are important people that are waiting, or these are important people who have this sort of spaces set out for them to do this waiting, but it's still very public.
And so it's showing, too, that the airports is one example, but the built environment very much reinforces this kind of speed up, this fact that we're all part of this. So you visited now. It's corporate yoga. You mentioned corporate yoga. Now, time is slowing down. Somebody is enlightened and figured out that by attending to my temporal needs, you're just making my life better and slower.
Right. And this is probably one of my most unpopular arguments because everybody keeps saying to me, well, why would you want to deprive tired workers from having yoga or meditation in the workplace? And I actually think of it as quite scary that we are offered or people are offered meditation and yoga in the office place. It keeps you actually tethered to your desk for longer. It also allows the sense of you have your own time or you have free time, and this free time is being provided to you while you're at work. Seems sort of counterintuitive to what free time should be about.
So yoga at the desk keeps you at your desk.
Yoga at your desk keeps you at your desk. And not only that, it keeps you maybe happier about your job, makes you feel more enlightened to be there.
Sure. And of course, anybody who's spent any time studying Eastern religions knows that the first thing the yogi will tell you is that yoga is not about increasing your performance. It's actually about really slowing down and taking the time to take in a world at its own pace rather than adjusting to the other pace, so that when you apply yoga to making you a more effective worker, you've actually kind of broken the whole principle.
Yes, and one of the interesting things I found was that modern postural yoga is actually based on the sitting body. So when yoga instructors would come into the office, they are treating this body as one that's constantly sitting. So that you have something called desk yoga classes.
Tell us about your interviews. Now you're talking with people, taking up their time. How did they feel about that?
how did they feel about that, or how did I feel?
And
about
how did you feel about it?
Well, I quite enjoyed talking to all these people, and they're all very generous with their time. But in fact, even how I would meet them and the encounters that we'd had, I could tell that their time sensibilities were quite different, and even quite different in terms of the type of labor that they were doing. So the yoga instructors, and I had many not show up. I had many late sometimes. And our meeting times are often these 45-minute chunks of time, which I liken to yoga classes. It was sort of like a time sensibility that even structured our meeting time together. Business travelers were very giving of their time. Also most interested in the idea of speed, like really interested in showing me the ways in which they thought that the world was speeding up. And I also thought it was interesting. It's almost like having to justify your own hard work and your own labor. Yeah. The world makes more sense to you and your tired body if you can say, well, the world is speeding up. And taxi drivers are meetings they were very generous with their time. I would find I felt guilty after hearing about what their days were structured like, that I was taking up so much of their time. But they were very giving and generous about this, about these moments.
And, of course, people are very self-conscious about it and in some ways trying to change the trend. I mean, the slow food movement, for instance, seems to be something that indicates a resistance.
Right. I guess it seems most obvious that our resistance to speed up should be slow, or slowness, slowing down. And I guess one of the points I want to make in this book is that rather than appeal to a uniform time or a sense of time in absolutes, we don't actually experience time in a uniform way. And in fact, our pace dictates the pace of others. So I was trying to draw out these threads so that slowness is not necessarily the answer to speed. Slowness is another speed that actually might be based on the fast labor of others to help you slow down. And I think this is something we forget when we just think of slow as an intrinsic good.
Well, you certainly can. You know, that one of the tricks is the show is done live, and that means our clock is our God, and we can't really go over. And so if you say, well, how do you get it all in the time that you have? And there are tricks to actually make it all happen on time. But in that case, I'm in the seat, and I can govern this. and the last resort is I've only got 30 seconds left. I have plenty more. But just to let – yeah, I mean, there is that indication that we're in the driver's seat when it comes to dictating the pace. Is there a general sense that it's going too fast, that this is beyond what is human and that we're hurting ourselves by adjusting to a world that is moving at this pace?
I believe this is one of the most popular ways of talking about time today. I think we're sort of a culture fixated on speed. And with that then comes things like being fixated on time management, work-life balance. There's a lot of talk about my time and how important the individual's time is. And that's sort of something I'm trying to counter, in a sense, not by dismissing the fact that the world is getting faster. I actually don't know if it's getting faster. The planet is still spinning the same speed, but we experience it differently depending on what we do. So for me, the more important question was that difference and not the uniform pace.
But there is so you don't think that things generally are getting faster, that we're having to do more, and just you know, the fact that we can read 100 or 200 messages in a day means that we're trying to communicate more often than we did before in the course of an hour.
Right. I agree. Some people are experiencing the world as faster. So the question for me always is for whom, and then if. For us, or whoever we are talking about, the world is getting faster. What are the different other paces that are being dictated by that sense of time? So if we're going to resist that speed up, we also have to take into consideration those multiple times or others or forms of labor that we actually are calling forth in our own experience of time.
But they're linked, aren't they? They're
yes,
correlated.
Totally.
It isn't just that other people are on their own pace. They're clearly linked to probably an economic system that's responsible. I mean, I think the easy thing to say is, well, technology is changing and it's speeding things up. But that is a technology in service of an economy. We could have developed this 1,000 years ago. People are no smarter.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that there is an economy now that demands faster computation, better data management, faster communication. That wasn't true 1,000 years ago. So all that. So okay, there are different rates. People, because of their place in the system, are experiencing time in different ways. Have you given thought to what it means for human beings to adjust? Those who have to work faster, or for all of us to be in a world where actually we have multiple senses of time. You think that was always true? I mean, 2,000 years ago, were people more or less on the same page when it came to time?
I'm not sure if people are more or less on the same page. I think it gets enhanced in different ways. There's a sort of synchronicity to how we all work and live together. And so it's that synchronicity I've been interested in. I don't know. If you have power in a society, you have different temporal relationships.
But it is interesting that we've been sold on the idea that if things are going fast for you and you don't have enough time. For instance, when you talk to business travelers who had to cope with jet lag, they dismiss the effects of jet lag because it's all in the service of sort of making the sale, right?
Well, in fact, And also they're taking pills sometimes to stay awake for 48 hours. And they're also getting a lot of what we call now jet lag therapy and jet lag nutrition. But being tired is considered to be an excuse for being unproductive. So they are jet lagged. And now actually the term has become social jet lag because it incorporates more than just flying. It's being tired by the speed of life. So there are hotels that are designed to cater to this jet lag body.
So again, you can make an industry out of the great speed up. Do you see, are there trends to bring our senses of time together, or do you see this thing fragmenting? I mean, it creates an interesting picture of people sort of spinning on this giant wheel farther and farther in terms of their experience of time and whether it would actually mean that we'll experience each other in different ways depending on, you know, which time orbit you're in.
Oh, yes. I wonder if we observed this different. If we observed our relationships with each other through time, we start to see things differently. You start to see how your own pace is dictating other people around you. And for me, at this point, this is about creating an awareness of this.
Well, it's interesting because the only time we become aware is when we're traveling, right? You go to other places, and for the most part, Americans are warned that in other places you go, things will be slower. 7 o'clock means any time between 4 and 9, that sort of thing, and you adjust to it. But always with a judgment, right? They're never on time in that place like we are. You know, so we're not able to just experience it. We have to sort of pass judgment, right?
Right, or we're driven by our own sense of time. Ours is the best, the fastest, the speediest, yes.
Faster and better is always slower and worse. That's
That's
my motto.
Right.
Thank you so much for being on the program. Sara Sharma is a professor of media and cultural studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She's giving a talk at the Regulator Bookshop in Durham this Friday, 7 o'clock. The book is called In the Meantime, Temporality and Cultural Politics. She will be at the Regulator on the 28th at 7 o'clock. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. It's a program produced by Laura Lee, Nicole Campbell, and Megan Modafferi. Robin Copley is our technical director. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. 45 seconds left.